Good afternoon. We'll call the House Education Finance Committee to order. Good to see all of you this week. Let's see, we'll kick off. Representative Bennett, would you like to move approval of the minutes from our last meeting on February 5th?
Madam Chair, I move the minutes.
All right. Any discussion? Not all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Thank you very much. And members, today the purpose of our hearing is to review sort of implementation of the Health Insurance Transparency Act. This was legislation passed in the previous, legislative session. And it's come to our attention that there may have been some concerns raised in that by some of the districts as they're following through with this and their requirements to seek bids from PEEP. And how that process is impacting their ability to do that and how they're working through this, and maybe either there's some lack of clarity in the existing statute language or other concerns. So with that, we've got a representative from the Minnesota Management and Budget Office, Scott Anderson. I think we'll call Mr. Anderson down first to testify, and then bring the rest of our testifiers up. And if we could, I'd like to ask members to let all of the testifiers present. Sometimes when we've gone in panel format, we end up shorting some of our folks on time to get through their remarks before we get to questions. So I'd like to proceed in that manner, if it's all right. And so with that, welcome. If you'd state your name for the record, and please go ahead and, whenever you're ready, provide us your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Scott Anderson. I'm the manager of the Minnesota Public Employees Insurance Program. I work at MMB, Minnesota Management Budget. There are a couple of provisions in the Health Insurance Transparency Act that apply directly to PEEP. One is that my program is required to respond directly to a request for proposal issued from a school district. We must respond directly to quotes received from school districts. And the other is the release of information to allow districts that are in our program to seek other bids. We are required to provide non-identifiable aggregate claims information. Part of the bill, there was a requirement that came along with a $294,000 appropriation to PEEP that was to be used to fund the preparation of the quotes we expected to receive. MMB reported on about January 14th that between July 1st of 2014 and December 31st of 2014, PEEP had received requests for approximately 20 quotes, and the amount of money to prepare those quotes was about $39,000, which is an average of approximately $1,957. That is very close to the estimate that we provided in our fiscal note of $1,750 per quote. Since December 31st, PEEP has received requests for quotes of coverage from another 172 school districts. We haven't been billed, nor have we paid for those yet, but the amount of money required to prepare those 172 quotes will total about $301,000. I'm basing that on the $1,750 estimate that I used in the fiscal note. So 172 districts times $1,750 is about $301,000. In order to provide quotes in time for districts that are renewing their coverage on July 1st, those requests should have been received by PEEP by January 31st. I expect there might be a couple more stragglers, but for the most part, I believe that the approximately 192 requests that we received are probably all we're going to get up through those groups renewing in July.
Anything else to add, Mr. Anderson?
I don't think so at this time. I'd certainly entertain questions. Those two provisions, the providing the quotes and supplying data are about the only two provisions of HIDTA that FEMA is directly affected by.
Thank you. And before I call up the next testifiers and we get to questions, just so you mentioned $301,000 is what you anticipate, and I know that your appropriation was for $294,000. So do you have any plans or suggestions for how you bridge that gap?
Madam Chair, the anything spent over and above the 294 will just come out of the PEEP funds that we have. They're not general fund dollars. PEEP is a very self-sufficient program. It's all money from local units of government and their employees.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And if you would not go too far, because you may be called back for questions. Thank you very much. And as I call the next panel up, let's see, I believe we have somebody from the National Joint Powers Association, Misty Myers, Mr. Lambrecht, Director of Business Services from Marshall Public Schools, Judy McDonald, Executive Director of the Osseo Area Schools, and Wayne, I apologize if I mispronounce your name, Kresmerick, with the Director of Finance and Operations for the White Bear Lake Area Schools. So if you want to come up in any combination of twos, perhaps, and present your testimony. And for the committee members' information, Inovo, who, as I understand it, is a contractor that works for the PEEP insurance, they were invited to testify, but the person who would come to testify is out of town this week, and he was unavailable. So there was an attempt to try to have them present as well, and the timing just didn't work out. So. Welcome. Please, whoever wants to go first, if you would state your name for the record, and then when you're ready, provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bruce Lamprecht. I'm Director of Business Services for Marshall Public Schools, and I'm the current past president of MASBO, Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. I'm also a member of the MASBO Legislative Committee. I'm here today to share with you our position on the HIDTA legislation that was passed in last year's legislative session, and how it is working, or maybe not working, in school districts throughout the state of Minnesota this year, and what changes that need to be made to improve that legislation moving forward. HIDTA was written specifically to allow schools to use joint powers authority to satisfy the bid process. Administrators in small and medium-sized districts don't have the staff to handle this on their own. That's why they've done it cooperatively and correctly for decades. The HIDTA legislation passed last session has added administrative expense and significant additional time commitment to the health insurance renewal process for many, if not most, school districts in Minnesota. The jury is still out as to whether it will provide any plan cost savings for districts and their employees. There will be winners and losers. Marshall is right in the middle of the process, so we don't know what our costs are going to be ultimately and whether or not we're going to be one of those winners or losers. But one of the things I think might happen, and I believe this is probably an unintended consequence, is that when all the providers take a look, including PEEP, at all the school districts, all the requests for proposals that have come forward, they are going to look at maybe cherry-picking some of the larger districts because that's more business for them. And in southwest Minnesota, Worthington, Marshall, and Wilmer may in fact benefit with their rates, and then all the other smaller districts surrounding us may in fact be paying for higher premiums. That's just my own opinion. We'll see whether that happens. I believe the legislation has also provided unfair advantages to the PEEP program, while other insurance organizations that provide the health insurance bids must provide them without the $294,000 that was given to PEEP to help market and provide bids. And my understanding is they're not providing bids to everybody. Let's level the playing field. Here are some suggestions that I have that I'd like you to consider. First, PEEP's interpretation of the law is that districts currently in the PEEP program do not have to go out to bid every 2 years, unlike those districts that are fully insured or self-insured through a service cooperative. This provides an unfair marketing and financial burden on the other insurance providers. MASBO proposes that all districts enrolled in the PEEP program should be required to go out to bid every 2 years as well. certainly they can go out to bid on their own if they choose, that meaning the PEEP districts, but so too could districts prior to the HIDTA legislation. If HIDTA is going to be a transparent process that fosters competitive bidding, then school employees enrolled in PEEP need to abide by HIDTA as well. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Secondly, under current Minnesota law, exclusive representatives can decide to get a quote from PEEP and leave their current carrier and service provider regardless if the quote is better for a district's insured members. MASBO proposes if under the HIDTA law, districts are required to go out every 2 years, this legislation allowing exclusive representatives the ability to leave should be rescinded and authority should be returned to where it should be at, and that's with the school boards, the local school boards. The ability of the teachers to unilaterally jump out of a district plan for PEEP causes underwriting and administrative problems for the remaining insured staff. If health insurance transparency and accountability is to be more than just a buzz phrase, shouldn't the state set up rules that make all the insured lives in a district accountable to each other? Why allow one exclusive representative so much authority and impact over everyone else in the same district? Thirdly, PEEP has taken the stance that should a district ask them for a bid through a service cooperative, that they do not need to respond to that request. PEEP should provide a quote to all school districts that ask for a proposal, an RFP, regardless if it's a fully insured district or one that is self-insured through the service cooperative. MASBO also proposes that districts should not be required to obtain a quote from PEEP. If PEEP can figure out how to respond to a multi-district bid, then don't make us have to get a PEEP bid. Who is working for whom here? Are districts working for the state? Shouldn't the state be working to help local districts? Finally, under current HIDTA law, fully insured districts and self-insured districts through a service cooperative program are required to go out to bid every 2 years. This again places that additional expense and administrative burden to those districts, and the result probably is going to be increased premiums. MASBO proposes that the requirement to obtain bids every 2 years should be eliminated and let individual districts, and that's management and employees, decide to go out for bid at least every 4 years. In Southwest Minnesota, this whole process is costing us and the other districts a great deal of time and money to do this, going through this bidding process. And it's not that we're against the bidding process. That's an important component. We need to do that. But we also need to have the ability to negotiate with those request for proposal respondents after sealed bids are open. With HIDTA, the ability to negotiate with those respondents is contemplated in the legislation, but the timeline spelled out in the statute make this an unnecessary, cumbersome, and onerous process. I ask you to consider making these suggested changes to the legislation to make the Health Insurance Transparency Act work better for all school districts, small, medium, and large. I thank you for allowing me to present today, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain those questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lambrecht. Please go ahead and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Misty Myers. I'm from National Joint Powers Alliance. I'm their attorney. And I would echo much of what Mr. Lamprecht said, actually. Just some history on the self-insured pools that service cooperatives like National Joint Powers Alliance offer cities, counties, and school districts. After HIDTA was passed, NJPA decided that we needed to go out to bid. Our contract with our current carrier had expired. And the way the pool is set up currently, school districts, cities, and counties are all in the pool. Everybody signs a joint powers agreement. There's a joint powers board. It is essentially a separate entity that the service co-op manages. So in the joint powers agreement, there's a provision whereby the schools, the cities, and counties give NJPA the authority to act on their behalf when it comes to insurance. NJPA did so, and because we do have school districts within the pool, we followed the HIDA provisions for the fully insured, since there's no exemption for self-insured districts within the pool. NJPA did ask for a bid from PEEP, as required by law. We also sent the RFP to four other carriers. One carrier took 10 days to determine that they were not going to be able to respond. PEEP responded within 100 minutes via email, stating that it was not a good fit for them. And then we did get three bids in from three other carriers. The way that the RFP was set up is that the claims information that was presented in the RFP was done in a secure manner, and it was by individual groups. So each school district's information was separate from another school district. So when the carriers responded, they responded and gave quotes individually to the school districts, cities, and counties. One thing that our organization has heard throughout this process, there were some letters that went out to some of our groups, our school districts. It wreaked havoc. We had to address those. School districts were very confused. If they were giving service cooperatives the authority to go out and do this on their behalf, why were they being threatened with litigation and other things, and seeing that they didn't do things correctly, they didn't follow the law? The school districts in Region 5, which is where NJPA is located, Todd County, Wadena County, Crow Wing, Cass, and Morrison County, it's all rural school districts. They're smaller, most of them, and they don't necessarily have the resources to go out to bid. I know everybody uses quote and bid simultaneously or interchangeably at some point, but they're two very different things. Going out and getting a quote is a very informal process. The process that's required by HIDA is very much more involved. It requires putting together an RFP document. NJPA uses an actuarial service to look at all the bids that come in, and then the negotiation pieces as well. It's very time consuming, it's very technical, which is why we have a risk management department to handle that. For the school districts to have to go out and do that in our area every 2 years is very cumbersome, and they don't have the resources to do it, which is why service cooperatives were given the authority to do this in the beginning. NJPA has been operating an insurance pool since 1985. I believe that was when the first official meeting of the pool of the Joint Powers Board occurred. The school districts in our region have also asked, why are the rural and small schools treated differently than the larger schools? The self-insured districts don't have to get a quote or a bid from PEEP, but the rural districts that utilize a service cooperative and sign joint powers agreements and create a joint powers pool are not treated as self-insured, even though the pool operates very much as a self-insured pool. The other question that's come up is why school districts are singled out. Cities and counties are not being mandated to go out and do this at this point, and yet they are public employees as well. It's my understanding that that HIDA, the push for HIDA was really to create transparency. I don't know that that did this. The bidding process that NJPA uses, the process that we use changed slightly with HIDA, but the transparency piece, Chapter 13 really speaks to that, and that's what we've always followed, the Data Practices Act. I'm not sure where the transparency came in, and the service cooperatives, at least NJPA, and I believe the others would agree, we have no problem with the competitive bidding process. We have no problem with transparency. This is how we as service co-ops have operated and continue to operate. So I think, in addition to Mr. Lamprecht's suggestions, NJPA, on behalf of its school districts, would also ask that self-insured pools also get an exemption as self-insured districts do. at the very least. And if you have any questions, I will also be sticking around.
Thank you. Representative Murphy, I think you had a question for someone on this panel.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Myers, I don't understand or know about the background of the National Joint Powers Association, who they are and where they're located.
Certainly. Representative Murphy.
Ms. Myers.
The National Joint Powers Alliance is one of nine service cooperatives that was created by Minnesota Statute 123A.21 back in the 70s. We're located in Staples, Minnesota.
Representative Murphy.
And could you give me some, Madam Chair, Ms. Myers, could you give me a little bit of background why you're the National Joint Powers Association?
Ms. Myers.
That may be beyond the scope of my knowledge base. It started out, all of the service cooperatives started out as educational cooperative service units, and they were each given a number. So National Joint Powers Alliance, when it was created in the 70s, was XU 5. And I believe the Metro Service Cooperative still goes by XU. Slowly, and I'm not entirely sure when, but all the service cooperatives began changing their names. National Joint Powers Alliance went from XU5 to, I believe, North Central Service Cooperative. There's also South Central Service Cooperative, Southwest. I mean, so they've all kind of evolved.
And Northeast.
And Northeast. And then before I got there, they did a name change to National Joint Powers Alliance because of some of the programming that we did. They had a national audience.
Huh. And Representative Murphy. Madam Chair, do the employee or the people that work for the National Joint Powers Association, are they Minnesotans?
Ms. Myers.
For the most part?
For the most part, and they're all local.
In Staples?
Mm-hmm. Staples, Brainerd, Wadena. Huh.
It's very intriguing to me, and I it explains. And so did the National Joint Powers Association or its predecessor, at whatever name, and XU5, did they take a position on the Health Insurance Transparency Act in any of the prior years before it was passed?
Ms. Myers.
It was just passed last May, I believe.
But we've been hearing about it in one form or another for at least 5 years.
And
Ms. Myers.
We've had, we've employed a lobbyist to speak on our behalf and to act on our behalf. How much involvement at these tables that NJPA has had, that is a little before I got involved. So I'm not entirely sure that anyone, I believe our risk management department has sent representatives down here. Whether or not they've spoken in a committee hearing, that I don't know.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Myers, when did you come on?
Ms. Myers.
To NJPA or
yes.
To the insurance saga?
NJPA.
October 2012.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, and I think we'll bring up our other two testifiers, and I would ask if you would both not go too far, because we may have questions that would bring you back to the witness table. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome. So whoever wants to go first, please just state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll go ahead. My name is Wayne Kazmarchek. I'm the Director of Finance and Operations in the White Bear Lake Area Schools.
Thank you, and I apologize if I butchered your name.
I stopped being...
Kazmarchek?
Kazmarchek.
Kazmarchek. All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I stopped being offended by mispronunciations long ago, so no problem. So I'm here to share White Bear Lake's story over the past few months, and I think a couple of my talking points could provide some context to what Mr. Lamprecht had shared with you. So just a couple of comments, as our journey is ongoing. But one of the issues that we faced leading up to a decision was that one employee group had the potential to impact all other employee groups by driving up their costs for health insurance by forcing groups into the PEEP program. So our carrier had our teachers left and gone to PEEP. We were not able to get quotes or bids, whichever term you want to use, from the interested carriers. So the rest of us would have been forced to go into PEEP. We had issues with that, many issues with that, but that potential outcome. The aggregate value of the plans in PEEP are less than what our the value of our current plans are, and we need to maintain a certain level of aggregate value for our employees. And so had we been forced to move and make PEEP the district-sponsored plan, that would have potentially led to grievances with our other employees. During the course of the last few months, this discussion actually created conflicts between our employee groups. Our teachers group ultimately, the leadership of that group, endorsed making the move to PEEP, and as things played out, that actually created a fair amount of conflict. Just a comment on what I witnessed, again, over the past few months in terms of how PEEP operated within our district. It seems that PEEP uses local union leaders to advocate on their behalf. And these local representatives, while they make every attempt to be educated, they're not licensed insurance brokers. And I think that puts them in an awkward position. And the same professional standards should apply to those representing the school district. We employ a broker to help us through these issues. And there were times when that imbalance was very evident. And again, I think it puts local union folks in a difficult spot. So just to wrap up our ultimate conclusion here with where we ended up, White Bear Lake, as of January 1, we've maintained our existing plans, and we went to a self-insured insurance plan. So the teachers did vote on whether or not they wanted to go to PEEP or if they wanted to continue with our existing plans and go to a self-insured model. And the teachers supported going to self-insured by a nearly 2-to-1 margin. All of our other employee groups supported going to a self-insured model by roughly by 95-to-5, a 95% approval to go to self-insured. So since January 1, and actually leading up to these decisions, we have had a very robust and active employee group, employee and insurance group, and that perhaps more than anything has brought transparency to our discussions about insurance. So we have all groups represented, and we have district administrators involved as well, and that has, I think, changed how we talk about insurance very positively. So the final point I want to make is that school boards and district administrators must keep the interest of all employee groups in mind when we make decisions about health insurance. And the current system, currently the way things are set up, is that this responsibility is severely undermined when one group can unilaterally make a decision that impacts all other employee groups.
Thank you. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Judy McDonald, and I'm the Executive Director of Human Resources at Osseo Area Schools. And I'm here to share information today about the impact HIDA and PEEP has had on our district, particularly as we have recently processed our health insurance renewal and some challenges we're facing with overall administration of the plan. So to provide you with a little bit of background, we're the fifth largest school district in the state of Minnesota. We serve over 20,000 students in various areas, including Osseo, Maple Grove, Brooklyn Park, Dayton, Rogers, Corcoran, and Plymouth. Is that seven? Yeah, okay. We're very unique. We have approximately 3,000 benefits, what we call benefits eligible employees, 80% of those employees chose to go to PEEP back in 2013. And we have the actually we have the largest employee group currently enrolled in PEEP. The remainder stayed with the district insured program under a fully insured program. And so, as you might be wondering, we certainly do have some unique challenges. Specifically, we're neither a PEEP district or a fully insured, we're a fully insured district, but only for 20% of our employee population. So that's added a lot to confusion, interpretation of the legislation, and those kinds of things. So prior to Education Minnesota employee groups moving to PEEP, we worked through what we called an insurance advisory committee. It was a very highly collaborative committee where all of our labor leaders would come together, look at the RFPs, look at the renewals, and make a recommendation to our school board as far as what the plan would be and the rates and those kinds of things. As a result of that, we really enjoyed relatively stable increases in our premiums. We averaged about 1.25% per year. That's about 0.5% less than what PEEP has averaged over the past few years. So it was pretty, we were pretty stable. However, our employees did decide to move to PEEP. And now with the HIDA legislation, one of the challenges we face, of course, that's been already talked about is the shortened renewal timeline. Now it's every 2 years. And this has had a significant impact on us. We've had the opportunity to enjoy a long-term partnership with our current carrier for many years. We would do that through negotiating extended contracts, commitment to each other to move forward with employee consumerism and all those kinds of strategies related to educating our employees and making them good consumer of our health care, good consumers of our health care dollars. With PEEP coming in, with the 2 years, now we're required to pay our brokers to analyze the data and process it every 2 years as opposed to three, sometimes 5 years, depending on what we negotiate with our current carrier. We also have a limited ability to negotiate with our carrier once we hit final bid. And as a result, because we weren't able, according to the legislation, as a fully insured group, the 20% of our workforce, we could not circle back with our current carrier. We're changing carriers because our current carrier didn't have the opportunity to submit, after the final was submitted, another competitive bid. And so we are changing carriers, which serves to upset our workforce, places more stress on our workforce, and takes a focus off our students. We also had a great deal of confusion as far as do we comply with HIDA or don't we? When we first contacted PEEP, for example, they said, well, you don't have to do these 2 years because you're a PEEP district. Well, 20% of our group isn't, and so there's no clarification in the legislation. We also, when we went out for bid, the data we received from PEEP, in accordance with the legislation, was extremely high level. It basically was, these are the premiums that were paid, these were the claims that were paid out, and the net difference. In order to process a reasonable renewal, you need to have more detailed data so you can look at things like catastrophic events in an employee's or a family's lives that you can take into account to mitigate the trend of the premiums projected out forward. Without more detailed data, the information PEEP provided, our broker said, was basically useless. Then also, again, we have problems with the plan administration. Then, so to wrap up, I would like to respectfully submit the following request. Please clarify the legislation, if it remains as it is now, to address a district who is neither PEEP nor non-PEEP, kind of a split district who's got a foot in both areas under a fully insured platform. Require consistency on claims reporting and information from all involved, all carriers involved. Make sure that PEEP does provide adequate information so that school districts can really process renewals and get relatively competitive quotes. Remove the two-year requirement for renewal and go back to 5 years. And then allow for negotiation with our current carrier after the final bid. It's going to be a change for our employees. We'll get through it, but again, it's going to require substantially more education, more support, more paperwork on all of our employees' parts. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald. We appreciate that. Thank you. I've got a few members on the list for questions, and but I understand that MSBA has a handout that you would like to share with the committee. Ms. Kelleher, if you want to come down and just introduce yourself into the microphone, and maybe you can just explain what it is you want to share with the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members. MSBA really hasn't had thought we were going to be down here to share any more stories. We thought our district spoke really loudly. But I was in a forum on Saturday with 20 school districts and 12 legislators there. And healthcare costs were an issue. One of the most moving stories came from Chatfield. Superintendent Harris, I talked to him this morning and asked if I could just sort of share their story. And what I want to do is, you've sort of heard about how PEEP is interplayed. Now I want you to think about what those health care costs could mean for a school district. If you look at that, he talks about the increases that we were given by the legislature the last 2 years are pretty much being eaten up by his health insurance claims through the ACA, and what that means for that small district. We just want you guys to know, we've talked about a 3% increase on the formulas being something MSBA feels strongly is needed. I hope these numbers, as you talk about health care, put in your mind the importance of funding these costs that these folks have shared for you. So that's all we've got, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Oh, and I don't know if I had you say your name into the record, just so we have that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for explaining the handout you're providing to members. We appreciate that. All right. So let's see. Representative Wills, I have you as hand up first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had a question for Mr. Anderson from MMB.
Okay. Mr. Anderson? And I might ask the testifiers if you would all kind of maybe come down and occupy those chairs right behind the witness table. That will probably facilitate a little bit of some back and forth that I assume was going to happen. All right, Representative Wills, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Anderson, I want to thank you for giving the overview and presentation. I just had a couple of questions. I was just wondering, based on the discussion today, if you think that there's a benefit for all schools or school districts to be going out to get a bid every 2 years?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Wills, there is a benefit to seeking bids. I'm not quite sure about the timeline. I have no opinion as to 2 years, 4 years, 5 years. That's not my call.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just a quick follow-up to that. I was wondering then, for the school districts that are already in PEEP, are they going out and getting a new bid every 2 years? Is that a requirement for them?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Wills. There's a provision in the governing statute of PEEP 43A that talks about the groups that participate in PEEP are exempt from the bidding requirements of 471-6161. Groups that are currently in PEEP, I believe, are exempt from seeking bids. However, they're not precluded or forbidden to seek bids.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I find that really interesting, and I'm wondering if you think then maybe that they should go out every 2 years like other districts, just to make it a clear, consistent requirement, regardless of whether you're already using PEEP or not. or you know, is it appropriate to have it separately cut?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Wills, my personal opinion is that the bids that the reason that groups are encouraged to seek a bid from PEEP is that PEEP has no motivation to bring groups in, other than providing public employers and public employees with affordable health care. I have no desire to bring people into this program. That's not my goal. I don't get paid on a per-head basis or anything like that. My goal in operating this program has been and always will be to provide the best bang for the buck for the local units of government that I serve and their employees.
Representative Wells.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Anderson. And it just seems to me that we should all be having the same level playing field, you know, whether you're in or out of PEEP currently, and it seems like a burdensome requirement that we're hearing from the other school districts that they're having to go out and get a bid from PEEP. But if you're already in PEEP, wouldn't it? It seems to me that you should have the same expectation, and you know, perhaps rates have changed over time. I'm just thinking about the challenges that have been faced, especially with the school district that shared about how they're in both worlds. And I'm just hoping that we as a committee and in light of the information that's been brought to us can resolve some of those issues. So I appreciate your insight on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank the presenters today for shedding a little light on this issue, which was contentious last several years and appears like it's going to remain to be a contentious issue. I actually have a couple of specific questions for Mr. Lambrecht. And for those of you who are new to this committee, what I've learned over the years sitting on this committee is when this committee or the policy committee attempts to direct or manage school superintendents or elected school boards, it's almost like asking Vladimir Putin to do something with the Ukraine that he doesn't want to do. I find them among the most difficult to accept change. And so it should be as no surprise to any of us that we have resistance to this change that the legislature passed and the governor signed into law. But my question for you, Mr. Lambrecht, you mentioned the term, in my own opinion, you referenced Southwest Minnesota, you referenced your school, Marshall, and also Worthington, and then you mentioned Masbo. Who are you really representing here today?
Mr. Lambert.
Madam Chair, Representative Anzels. Who am I representing today? First of all, I'm representing MASBO, Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. That was my primary task here in the testimony, to lay out our platform in regards to the HIDTA legislation and the changes we feel that need to take place. And then second of all, I'm representing Marshall Public Schools. I'm the Director of Business Services, as I mentioned before. And in my position, I work with the insurance bidding process. I have for many years. And that's why I probably said, okay, my personal opinion, but then I did say in our area, Southwest Minnesota, in reference to the three largest school districts and what the impact might be in regards to the request for proposal process.
Representative Anzos.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. And do you know offhand how many school districts in the state are dues-paying members of MASBO?
Mr. Lamprecht.
Madam Chair, Representative, dues-paying members of MASBO, I would say we probably have 400 individuals as part of MASBO.
400 districts or individuals?
No, 400 individuals.
I would like to know how many districts.
I would say in the neighborhood of 250, 275. I don't know that for sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to, my comrade had mentioned that school boards and superintendents tend to resist change. And frankly, I must say that the ones that I met on Saturday and have met through the years and have participated as one, that the school districts in our state have brought about waves of innovation. You make the mistake of referring to chalk dust, and they try to age you, because whiteboards and technology that this state's invested and what it's brought about innovation-wise has really helped. So that's just a slight disagreement with my comrade.
Representative Quam, if you suspend for just a second, if anyone has a cell phone anywhere in proximity to the microphones, it creates that feedback sound. So if I'm hearing it a little bit here, so if you can make sure to move your phone away, that would be helpful. Go ahead, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was worried it was the plate in my head, but as we debated this legislation recently, I had some fears and some concerns. But I always, clung to the thought that there was, optimism about the professionalism, and that, the staff and PEEP would do a complete job. The testimony today seems to indicate that there are gaps to that, and that it's disconcerting when different testifiers have brought up that there's picking and choosing. And when we fund, and then we funded in that bill so that they could do, quotes, provide the option of service across the state, I don't think anyone had the anticipation that there would be selective performance of duty, selective quoting, because you can't reply to a RFQ in a couple hours if you're actually reading them. So that would lead me to believe the possibility of a list or a internal agreement of who would receive quotes. And frankly, that's a bureaucratic abuse of power, and I wonder if there should be some checking in to see if there's malfeasance of duty to give fair and balance to this, across the state. But for the service co-ops, and I was at the meeting last Saturday, and there was a lot of discussion, and as we saw here, that this committee is on education, but the impact of health costs are greatly over trivial. They're a major factor in the budgets. And so I would like to find out from the testifiers connected with the service co-ops over that 15, 20, 30 year period, how often there were rebates and refunds and money coming back to the districts from the service that they're providing, allowing small districts and groups to bundle together to do it more effectively, because when I was on the Zed governing board, we had seven small school districts because we didn't have the mass, the critical size to be able to do certain things. And so if the testifiers that are familiar with the service co-ops might be able to enlighten us.
Ms. Myers, do you want to come down to the table?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Over the last 30 years, I'm not sure how the other service cooperatives operate their pools, so I'm not going to speak to that. Specifically, with the National Joint Powers Alliance, we do have a rebate program. It's for all of our Region 5 full voting members, so the five-county area that I mentioned previously, cities, counties, and school districts fall into that, and they do get a rebate. It's not from the insurance specifically, because we do offer programming outside of the insurance pool. We have things like innovation funding, so school districts come with a proposal for some sort of technological advancement that is well beyond my capabilities to understand, and they potentially have the ability to receive funding for that. So we do things beyond that. Our pool is self-sufficient. Our members, we don't charge our members a fee to belong to the pool, so we don't get any monies coming in other than the premiums for the pool. So, you know, we do get drug rebates, and those get passed along. And I'll check with the risk management department because they may have more detail as far as how much, how often, and the trend from the inception of the pool, and I can get that to the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. I think that would be helpful. Okay. Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before I go into a couple questions here, I need to preface this. This was in my backyard. And let me tell you about the superintendents that's affected. One of those superintendents is Superintendent Gene Harthman, who has reduced his position by halftime so that he can drive bus. So probably not a difficult individual in trying to resist change. Superintendent John Ellerbush in Royalton, they're trying to pass a bonding referendum just to keep up, and it's failed four times. And that has been a very difficult thing for them to do in a town of 1,000 people. Superintendent George Weber, who's in Pierce, Minnesota, who's been there for about 10 years, is one of the most innovative gentlemen that I know as far as testing and moving things forward. This is just a small segment of the nine schools that were affected in this. They do not have time to do the bids on their own and to go to the bidding process. So therefore, they've entered into the Joint Powers Agreement, and they are using that to pool their resources together to get through this process so that they can get better and more competitive rates for their teachers and their staff. On July 8th, they worked with NJPA, and they released the RFP. And that RFP was then sent out in the form of an email. And Mr. Anderson, I'm going to call you up in a second, and I apologize because I now understand some of the motivation a little bit better after your testimony. But Pete responded very quickly by saying, within 100 minutes, you're not a good fit for us. You're not a good fit for us. These schools are trying to find competitive rates, and what they were told was, you don't fit our profile. And I understand that now because you're a government agency. You're not out there soliciting business. You've got a $6 million operating income. You have no, you don't need to do that, and nor should you. So somebody else is driving this motivation that has gotten behind schools. And so let me dig into that just a little bit, because that bid went out, and 100 minutes later, Peep responded, you don't fit our bid. Fine. Big deal. They got their four other quotes. The schools did exactly what they thought they were supposed to do. They followed it to the letter. And they got all the bids. September 25th, a letter was sent out from Education Minnesota that said, no, you did it wrong. So I'm asking, who's driving this? And I have the letter in front of me. And so I have a couple of questions, but in their letter it says, on September 25th, now remember, July 8th was when the bid went out, and what happens, those of you that have been teachers like myself, I know many of you have, September 25th is homecoming time. This is the first 3 weeks of school. We're trying to gear up. We're trying to get in classrooms. And I'm called to a meeting of 9 superintendents who are saying to me, we now have to go defend ourselves legally because we've been told we did something wrong here. I think we all know that attorney fees are not a good use of educational dollars. But that's what was brought up on this. And I don't fault Pete for that. You didn't send the letter. I have a couple of letters here I talked to then Commissioner James Showalter. So I ask, and if I could bring you up, Mr. Anderson, I do have a couple of questions for you. And I apologize. I'm not angry. My tone. This happened right in my backyard. This was a very difficult situation for our schools who were just trying to do the best. Mr. Anderson, did NJPA provide the proper information for you to respond with a quote had you desired?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kreshaw, I don't know if the correct information was in there or not. There are a few good reasons why we responded so quickly. One was that the RFP itself, to us, and when we talk about us, let me explain, I'm the only employee of Pete. We pay for another half employee, that's an auditor, but I'm the only employee. So the services are contracted for with my contractee is in Australia. He's out helping us out. Excuse me. The RFP went directly to him. And he called me immediately. Now, this is early July. This is very soon after enactment. We're very unfamiliar with this. We're not unfamiliar with getting requests for quotes. But what we got was what appeared to be an RFP for third-party administrative services. These are services that PEEP procures. We do not sell. We are not authorized to sell them. And Mr. Byrne, the owner of Inovo, called me and said, am I missing something? Is there something in this RFP that I do not understand? And I know, again, that the law was recently passed, and it said that PEEP shall respond within 60 days to any request received directly from a school district. This didn't raise a red flag. It wasn't from a school district. We have never refused to quote anyone that is authorized to participate in this program. I ethically wouldn't do that. There is absolutely no malfeasance occurring at MMB and in PEEP in particular. I promise you that. I discussed with Mr. Byrne, we went through the RFP, I saw things, I've got it here, I don't know if you've seen copies of it, this is just the front page, but we're looking for a national solution. We tell you which groups are going to be in the pool. I can't operate a program like that. I can't set rates for groups with unknown populations. I had absolutely no idea that this was a request from individual school districts. And in hindsight, I guarantee you, I wish I had. This would have been much, much simpler. Because I believe three of the districts that were involved in this did actually request individual quotes, and they got them immediately because, as we know now, we had the data. So they did receive their quotes.
Representative Grisha.
And Madam Chair, and Mr. Anderson, I believe you. I know that you did exactly what you thought was the right thing in that situation. And at the time that NJPA received that you were not going to bid, I believe, and from what I've heard them, they realized, okay, fine, we're going to move on. My question is, did MMB go back and say, oh, you know what, that was wrong, we're going to do it over? Where did that come from? Because in the letter in September 21st that said these school districts did it incorrectly, who pushed that to say that it was done incorrectly? Because what I believe is NJPA did exactly what the law said. I believe you responded exactly the way you were supposed to. But who motivated this to turn it into a legal situation?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kreshaw, I do not know. I'm not responsible for providing very much advice on statutes other than 43A to our members and to interested parties. This provision, I believe, is in 471, which is HIDA. And if you're speaking of the letter, I believe it's on the letterhead of Education Minnesota. I had no, I wasn't even copied on the letter, so I couldn't tell you. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, Ms. Myers, who do you believe motivated it?
Ms. Myers?
As an attorney, I don't generally like to guess, especially on the record.
Who was on the letter?
On the letterhead was the Education Minnesota stamp, and I also had a phone conversation after the letter went out with Deb Korhaus from Education Minnesota.
Representative Krisha.
And so, thank you, Madam Chair, and members. So we have two entities that were doing exactly as the law prescribed, and there was a hiccup. And so when I sent a letter to Commissioner Showalter and asked him about this, his response was that this is an important tool for school districts to get the best possible rates and that they're required to receive the quote. So we have an issue here of miscommunication where I believe, Mr. Anderson, your group did exactly what you're supposed to do. I wish you had gone to page two. We paid you an average of $17.50 to do that, and I understand what happened. But so here's my question. Who's driving this now? I'm wondering if Ed Minnesota has someone here that would like to respond to that.
Yes, if there's, I believe we do have representatives from Education Minnesota in the audience. If one of you would like to come down to respond, we would welcome your testimony. Thank you. If you please just state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is James Hager. I am an employee at Education Minnesota.
Thank you. Would you like Representative Kreese to restate the question?
That would be helpful. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. So, and I, thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if you have a copy of the letter, but I do, and if you'd like it. So on September 25th, Education Minnesota sent a letter stating that NJPA and the school districts were not in compliance because they didn't request multiple bids. Yet the statute clearly states that nothing in this section shall restrict the authority to grant school district of education to work in these scenarios. My question to you is, was it Education Minnesota's belief that the school districts had not complied with HIDTA?
Mr. Hager.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Krisha, I would respectfully ask for the opportunity to connect back with our attorney to make sure that I understand both the content of the letter and her thinking behind it. Before we answer that testimony, I'll take a clue from Ms. Myers about making sure I know what I'm talking about on that issue.
Representative Krisha.
And thank you. And I appreciate that. And just if I could bring up Mr. Kazmierczak.
Kazmierczak,
thank you. Members, here's what I would offer for us to think about. The intent of this to get competitive bids is very, very good. But if we're going to put our employees, pitting them up against administrators to do this, as you talked about in your situation at White Bear Lake, that's not good. That's not transparency. That's not good for anybody. And I would welcome Ed Minnesota. In fact, I would welcome you to come back to this committee and explain why the letter was sent out. It was. Maybe you have great reasons. But I can tell you I had a group of superintendents who were very, very concerned when they should have been working on academics, and they should have been working on the achievement gap, and they should have been working on where the homecoming dance was going to be 2 weeks later. I will tell you, this put them in a tailspin, and I think, Mr. Kazmierczak, you talked a little bit about the employee relations. What miscommunication happened there? Because this was supposed to be transparent, correct?
Mr. Kazmierczak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What miscommunication? I think there was just, I think for us it was a situation where we had one group advocating for one thing while the district was trying to do its due diligence and look into what would be best for all employees. And so we had multiple employee unions and multiple opinions, and so it just created a lot of tension internally as we worked through that process. I think to our employees' credit, we started the process by involving every single unit, and we have an insurance advisory committee that really did look into this, and ultimately, I think we're fine. I think in terms of the relationships between the groups, but it did cause it did cause some issues for our employee groups.
President Precia.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. And my final comment, members, I know many of you at the table here, and we all have good intentions, but we can do better. We can do better with this legislation so that it's not so contentious for our schools. As Mr. Anderson talked about, they're about to go to 192 schools, and if they don't respond to some and they do respond to others, and they get letters from Education Minnesota saying they didn't comply with the law, I can tell you what those meetings are going to be like. They're very hard and they're very difficult. And as I said, lawyer fees are not a good use of educational dollars. We took $294,000 out of the education budget to go in here. How many students were educated with those dollars? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would the woman from Osseo, I think it was Osseo, please come back to the table? I'm sorry, ma'am, I missed your name.
It's McDonald, Ms. McDonald.
Thank you. That one I can do.
I've got Kasmer checked down, so if you need help.
Yeah. Could you ever have to spell that one? Trust me, Dabney often gets misspelled as Divine, which works well for my brother, the minister. I mean, who wouldn't want Reverend Divine in the pulpit on Sunday? But back on task. Ms. McDonald, as I came in, your primary concern seemed to be going out every 2 years for bids rather than longer periods, which is what you've done previously. What is the length of your contracts with your teacher group and with your other employee groups?
Ms. McDonald.
Madam Chair, Representative, I need clarification. When you say contracts and the length of the contract, are you talking about collective bargaining agreements or contracts with carriers?
Madam Chair,
Representative.
Collective bargaining agreements with your school staff, with teachers, custodial folks, the different categories that might be represented.
Ms. McDonald.
Madam Chair, Representative, 2 years.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When I was teaching, as I recall, in the teacher's contract at least, and I assume in my colleagues in other job classes' contracts as well, we normally negotiated a fixed dollar amount that the district would contribute towards health care. It usually differed. Individuals who took just coverage for themselves got $1 amount. Individuals who took coverage for their family took a different dollar amount. The district always wanted it as a flat dollar contribution for budgeting purposes. Is that the way Osseo has approached it, or do you negotiate a percentage of the health care premium that the district would contribute?
Ms. McDonald.
Madam Chair, Representative, just recently, about a year and a half ago, we managed to incorporate new language into our contracts that capped the district contribution toward health insurance at all levels for single plus one, and for family coverage. Prior to that, it was represented in percentages.
Okay. Representative Dabney.
So, thank you, Ms. McDonald. You know, Madam Chair, what I'm seeing the HIDTA language did was simply align the frequency of health insurance bidding and the prices that became known with the employee contracts. And when you've got a situation where the district is protected in the collective bargaining agreement, capping its contributions, having the bidding process on the same cycle as the employee negotiating process simply provides that same protection to the employees, because it's now known when we sit down at the bargaining table what those health care rates are going to be. And Madam Chair, just a comment, I find it bemusing at best that the school districts are now offended that they have to go out and get bids on contracts from multiple providers. Because it was probably within the last 10 years that we had to deal with the fact that the exus, the precursors to the co-ops, had a stock provision in their health care contracts that said if a district just went out to bid, they were subject to being kicked out of the health care pool for 3 years. If they simply asked another provider, what might it cost to cover our staff, they could be kicked out of the pool. No school, I don't remember any school board coming forward and saying, that's wrong that we can't go out and bid. It's wrong that we're hostage to the co-ops. But now somehow it's wrong to have a transparent process, multiple bidders, and market, a healthy market to help set the rate for health care costs. And it was Representative Davids and then Chair Krenke and myself who finally had to get into state law a prohibition on banning, a prohibition on punishing school districts for acting, asking for bids for health care costs. So for the districts to now come forward and complain that they've got to go out to get competitive bids, bemusing is the best choice of words I can come up with. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, your comments make sense with regard to wanting to align the renewal of health insurance contracts with contracts, and you had argued that that makes it known what those costs are going to be, but I think there's a definite advantage that you might have overlooked, that if you have a contract for 5 years, you now know what that cost is and you've secured it. So it makes it easier to make the same level of commitment or promise because you've secured it for a longer period of time. And there tends to be, in most contracts, there seems to be an economy of scale, maybe even less underwriting issues, that you can deliver the same level of coverage if it's a contract and have that fixed for a period of 5 years. So it's more predictable, I would presume, for school districts to be able to do that.
Madam Chair?
Representative Dabney, to that point.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. Representative Hertaus, unfortunately, the predictability that you're looking for does not exist in the longer health care contracts because they usually include a cap in terms of percentage of increase in the later years, not a fixed rate. So you do not get that certainty that you and I were just talking about. The way you get the certainty is to go out and get competitive bids on the same calendar as the employee bargaining efforts. That's how you know that if we go with this carrier, it's going to cost this much, that carrier will cost that much, and people come in at whatever they come in at. Otherwise, you don't have that certainty.
Representative Hertaus, did you have an additional comment or a question for one of the testifiers?
Well, no, I accept that as an explanation. I don't pretend to have been involved in those contracts. But it, in my world, if you negotiate a contract, you negotiate a contract so that it's fixed and should offer predictability and make a difference in terms of capping or limiting those types of escalators. And it's intent usually is in exchange for that contract, in exchange for the business, we're making a promise to keep the rate fixed. So my presumption, of course, is that, you know, who's negotiating the contract? Is it the insurance company? Is it the provider? Or is it the district? Well, the district certainly is at an advantage with regard to not having to buy product from you, so we can go anywhere we want. Whoever will give us the best price on a five-year term would be the logical one that you'd want to select. But anyway, that's my rebuttal. I'm sticking to it.
There you go.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt?
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Are we going to hear from other testifiers yet today?
If we have others who would like to testify, we would be happy to have them. So I would invite any other individuals here or members of the public who would like to provide testimony.
I guess, Madam Chair, I'd be interested in any of the rural co-ops that were not involved with this specific incident that I wasn't aware of, or other members that I think we spend a lot of time on outside of maybe the agenda here. I'd be interested, and I have some questions and comments at that point.
Yeah, I'd throw it open, anybody. We have all the people who approached us when we posted the hearing that said they would like to testify are here. Mr. Walseth, if you'd like to.
Hey, fools, rush in. Sam Walsh, I do have contracts with all of the what were called the educational service cooperative units across the state. Been involved in legislation going back many years. I do recall the conversation Representative Davidy and I had, I think, in the 2005 session on the amendment to 123.821 on jumping in and jumping out of pool. So anyway, I can try and I didn't prepare any comments today, Madam Chair. I can certainly take some questions and do my best and maybe get back to you with some information too. Representative Mark Bird.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Mr. Walsett. When are most of these districts going to be opening up their bids? I know my local districts, I think it's going to be March 9th. What do you see statewide as far as when they will open those bids?
Madam Chair, Representative Mark Bird, I think, yeah, this spring is when probably half of rural Minnesota or more is going to be in mid-HIDA, if you will.
Yeah. Representative Mark Bird.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just... As Representative Amzell said, you know, this is a contentious issue. But I do think we just need to bring it down just a notch. Here's my thing. I want something that works. I supported this, but is it perfect? I don't know. And are there going to be some fixes? I'm hearing that certainly just from what I'm hearing is causing some what I think legitimate concerns that need some fixes. But I really think the proof... will be in the pudding when we see these bids come out. And how is that really impacting districts? Is there going to be cost savings? Will there be winners and losers? Will the larger districts benefit where the smaller ones, which I, you know, will see higher rates and so forth? And I know every district's a little different, but, you know, to say that there weren't problems prior to the enactment of the law last year would be ignoring the fact that we have a far from a perfect system. And I wanted to ask Mr. Walseth one thing here, and just something I wasn't aware of till today, kind of as I talked. But before, some of the co-ops would offer just kind of one rate, and then they went to a blended, you could go to a blended rate, where if you had maybe less claims, you had a less increase versus, and in one superintendent I talked to, you know, the rate probably went from 5 to 45%, but he said in some cases the 5% probably should have been lower and the 45% increase should have been higher. So you've got kind of winners and losers. And just any response to that, is that the way that kind of works right now?
Mr. Walsh.
Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt, it's going to vary by region, but those regional advisory committees, those insurance pool, I just call them the insurance pools, but they're governed by a, you know, joint powers and advisory committee. They do set their, they get their initial rate renewals back, which is kind of like the raw number based on solely on your claims, but then they will meet by region. They will determine a rate narrowing, if you will, rate banding, if you will, to bring everybody a little bit closer to a norm. I mean, that's what the pooling effect is. And so you might have had a good year in your district and you should have had a 0 or a 1 or a negative 5, and then I had a bad year and I should be looking at a plus 40. But we're going to sit down and talk about that, and we're going to probably come up with something that's more of a 5 to 15 within our region. And then it's going to switch over time. I'm going to have a better year. You're going to have a worse year. And so you just stay together in those regional groups and try to sort, you know, year in and year out, sort through your renewals to try and make it more palatable than just the actual exposure to your own claims data. I know each region does it a little bit differently. They're, you know, governed by their own regional advisory committees, but that's generally how they do it, yeah.
So, Madam Chair, and I'm really naive to this, and I should know a lot more, but it seems like maybe with HIDA we're going to more of an independent, each school district, each on their own. And to me, what, might that drive up costs versus being in a pool? Or am I looking at this wrong? I mean, if you're in this pool, and I see where if you're a high user, you would have gone up higher than the 45%. So in a pool, you may gain versus going on your own. On the other side, if you're low, you may in a pool be a loser, but on independent, if you can be self-insured, you might be a winner. What's your reaction?
And Madam Chair and Representative Marker, I think that's to Mr. Lambrecht's concern, is that you're going to have cherry picking, if you will, of the pools. And those with good rate experience and good numbers are going to say, you know what, I'm out of here. We've got pressure to take our own, to jump out of the pool and go somewhere else. And then those who are left are the ones who have the bad experience, and then that sets it into the infamous death spiral of an insurance pool. And then then it falls apart. And, you know, I did disagree a little bit with Representative Dabney 10 years ago on that. And I think there's another side of that, too, about why you didn't want districts just jumping out of pools, was to, for that purpose of keeping stability in those regional pools. I would say with the, I like to call it the Dabney Amendment to the Service Cooperative Statute, you know, they did survive that, and that's fine, and there's plenty of shopping that goes on. I think that is a concern, that will the pools start to get picked apart and cherry-picked through this process?
Madam Chair, last comment. I would suggest that if we can get data maybe by even April or something, to come back and have another meeting on this. I mean, really, I just think we're going to have a lot more to know. We already know kind of how the process is working, probably need some fixes. But I'm really interested to see what the final results are on premiums and if, in fact, we see real winners and losers and kind of based on size and enrollment and so forth. So I would just respectfully ask the chair to maybe if we get more data when these bids are opened in early March or whatever to come back and take a look at this again.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And I believe we will probably be hearing about this again before the end of this year. So, Representative Grisha.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Marquardt, because you've echoed a lot of my. I don't believe there's a repealer here. I believe it's a fix. And one of the things that, and thank you, Mr. Walseth, but in our area, in the rural areas, allowing schools to pool their resources and act like a self-insured or a larger school district for the purposes of better rates makes a ton of sense. As long as we're not breaking that up, we're helping them. When we break them up, what we do is we pit them against each other. We pit a Little Falls, which has 200 kids per class, versus an Upsala that has 30. And we don't want to do that. We want instead of 200 kids or 30, we want 230 kids. We want to allow them to pull the teachers. So I will absolutely work with you or whoever, because I think we can get to good, fair legislation and let these districts pull their resources together, because they're trying to do the things that we want them to do, save money, educate kids, and give good benefits to teachers. We've heard time and time again, teachers want to work, and we need to get them good benefits. That's what everybody's trying to do. So. And if we can interject ourselves less, I think we help.
Mr. Hager? I'm sorry, can I have you spell your name? I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly. Is it Hager?
Hager.
Madam Chair, most of my family mentions or pronounces it in different ways, so you're doing just fine there. It is spelled H-A, two G's, and then A-R. I often say like the slacks.
Okay, got it.
But I just, I did want to take a second, like Mr. Walseth, I haven't prepared any testimony. I did want to just make a quick outset a comment in terms of why we pursued the HIDTA legislation in the first place, and also one clarification on one of the comments that was made. To go back, pre-HIDTA, pre-last year, Education Minnesota had worked for several years on a bill that would put all school employees in the state into one health insurance pool. That bill saw some success in various years, but was never passed. And what we decided to do last year was work with many on both sides of the aisle to prepare legislation that would essentially stick with the same system, not make a dramatic change to the system, but would identify ways to improve the system, bring more competition, bring more competitive bidding, and bring a bidding process that ultimately got to a better result for our members. Because as Representative Marquardt had mentioned, our members were seeing, in many cases, rate increases on an annual basis that were often in the double digits year after year. And they were crying out for help that they needed help on that. And HIDTA is the result of our work on that. I would also echo both Mr. Walseth and Representative Marquardt in saying that we haven't seen yet, really, in our perspective, if the bill works. We know that it was passed in May. It was implemented over the course of the summer. And only a few districts have actually had time to fully implement both the timelines and the process under HIDTA. We will see under districts that have in July 1st renewal date, something like 170 districts will have gone through the full process. And that is when we believe that we'll have a real accounting, it's about half the districts in the state, of whether or not this works. The last thing I did just want to clarify on this thing that has been mentioned by several testifiers about the two-year contracts, the HIDTA law under 471-6161 subdivision 8 paragraph C states that school district contracts for group health insurance must not be longer than 2 years unless the exclusive representative of the largest employee group and the school district agree otherwise. And I want to state that for a reason, that the pre-HIDTA law said that a school district had to go out for an RFP every 5 years. Under HIDTA, we changed that to an RFP every time that their current contract ends. And we did say that, as I read, those contracts must not be longer than 2 years unless the exclusive representative of the largest employment group agrees. So I want to first of all clarify that there's nothing that says a district could not have a five-year contract. That's something that is very possible under HIDTA. To Representative Dabney's comments, what we were seeing for decades was that districts would unilaterally sign contracts that would have large escalators, no more than 15% in the third year, no more than 20% in the fourth year, that kind of thing. And they would do that with that cap that Representative Dabney and Ms. McDonald mentioned, where the school district's contribution to that was capped. So when those costs were going up 15% a year, 20% a year, that kind of thing, that was falling completely on the backs of our members. What we did with the legislation was say that the cap was 2 years unless there was an agreement with the exclusive representative of the employees, with the idea that if it was a good deal, if you could find a good bargain, to Representative Hertas's point, on a five-year contract, you absolutely should do that, and our members would be thrilled with that idea. But that if you couldn't find a good long-term deal, if there was concerns about huge escalators that would fall on our members' backs, that they would have some protection and some ability to say, no, that's not fair to us. We would prefer to keep it at a lower-term deal where we know the costs and we understand what we could be facing. I hope that makes sense. I just wanted to clarify again, that's 471-61-61, subdivision 8, paragraph C, and with that, I'd be happy to take any questions on it.
Thank you. I'll get to you, Representative Bumpett. Representative Murphy. Sorry, I can't see you. Yes, for a question.
I have a couple clarifying questions.
Yes.
Before we conclude, I appreciate this early
overview of what's been our experience with the Health Insurance Transparency Act that was passed last spring. I tend to agree with Representative Marquardt in that we don't have enough experience rating yet to make judgments, but one clarification. Representative Crenshaw, you talked about this was happened in your backyard, and you mentioned a group meeting with a number of superintendents, and when Ms. Kelleher spoke on behalf of the School Boards Association, and she passed out this paper because that was a meeting of 12 superintendents or 12 legislators and a larger group of superintendents. That's not the same meeting. Is that correct? Okay. Then I have that clarification now. So there are two different things, but the meeting with the 12 legislators was
last week. I think this was.
And was that part of what brought this bill to the attention of this committee?
Representative Murphy, no, I don't believe so. And I apologize, I did not have time to talk with MSBA about this. Just indicated that they wanted to share this information. I will offer MSBA the opportunity to come down and clarify in case I am misstating this. But I believe this was just a meeting locally, maybe in the Rochester area, of school districts and legislators, and the topic of health insurance cost and other things in a larger sense came up. Am I accurately capsulizing this? And if Representative Quam, you were there, if you want to chime in and offer a little clarification on what this meeting was, and it was separate from the meeting that Representative Crenshaw was talking about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, this is a regular meeting of educators, superintendents, school board, and legislators in southeastern Minnesota. And it is about multiple topics, some almost as fun as this. And this just happened to be part of it because, as we see, it's important.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Thank you. I've got that clear now. The next clarification I'd like to make is for the testifiers today, which I appreciate that you came forth. And Mr. Lamprecht, Ms. McDonald, Mr. Kazmierczak.
Kazmierczak. You got it.
is this your first time testifying on the Health Insurance Transparency Act, or have you been a regular contributor to the discussions before the legislature on the passage of the Health Insurance Transparency Act?
Did you want to direct that to one specific or all of them, Representative
Murphy? I would like an answer from each one of them.
All right.
Please.
So, Ms. McDonald, you're there if you want to start off, and the rest of you, if you want to just respond if you've testified before on this issue or if this is your first committee presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Murphy, I did testify last week, and that was my first opportunity to testify related to HIDA. Previously, we would meet with the Minnesota Association of School Personnel Administrators, and we would send individuals to testify on our behalf. But personally, I had the first adventure last week.
Well, we appreciate it.
Sir Kasmercheck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would echo that last week. I testified, and then today. So these are my first two experiences.
But not last year?
No.
Okay. One more clarification from Mr.
Kasmercheck.
You didn't, when you were talking about the insurance brokers and the teachers, talking about health insurance, you didn't say we trust the insurance brokers more than our local teachers, did you?
Mr. Kasmercheck.
Madam Chair, no, I didn't say that. What I said was insurance is complex, and we rely on professionals to provide guidance for us, and it seemed like, with my experience, that I think our local union leaders also work with our broker. Advocacy for P perhaps just put them in a difficult position, I think.
Thank you for that clarification.
Mr. Lamprecht and Ms. Myers.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, this is the first time that I've testified in regards to the HIDA legislation this year or last year.
Ever. Thank you.
Ms. Myers?
I testified last week, and as previously stated, I believe we had representatives previously during all sessions, not me personally, but members of the NJPA staff and or other representatives from the co-ops.
I appreciate it. Thank
Ms.
you.
Murphy.
And, Madam Chair, one more.
Yes.
Clarification from Mr. Anderson.
Yes. Thank you.
And this is kind of my state government hats that I don't have anymore, but who's in Australia?
Mr. Anderson, we're all dying to know.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, Sean Byrne is an individual that owns a company called Innovo Benefits Administration. They are the company responsible for administering PEEP, under contract with MMB to administer PEEP.
Okay.
Representative Murphy.
Sean Byrne, B-U-R-N?
B-Y-R-N-E.
And what's the name of the company again?
Innovo, I-N-N-O-V-O, Benefits Administration.
Representative Murphy.
Just a minute. This is big, Madam Chair. Sean Burns of Innovo Benefits Administration has been contracted by the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that is correct.
Representative Murphy.
I see just an outside
here. And what is the address of Innovo Benefits Administration, do you think?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, excuse me just one moment. It's in Eden Prairie, Minnesota.
That makes me feel so much better.
No, it's in my contacts list.
We could go.
Madam Chair, excuse me. Representative Murphy, it's 8220 Commonwealth Drive, number 150.
Representative Murphy, I could take you there, and we could see how Mr. Burns' trip to Australia was together.
So, Madam Chair, that's my next question. Madam Chair, does Sean Byrne live in Eden Prairie or surrounding area, or does Sean Byrne live in Australia?
Mr. Anderson.
Or was he just visiting Australia when that's how it came up?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I'd like to apologize to Mr. Byrne in absentia for what he's going to listen to later. His son is spending a semester in Australia. Mr. Byrne accompanied his son to get him set up, and I believe he's returning Monday.
Mr. Byrne is, but the son is still staying? Mr. Anderson, Madam Chair, Mr. Anderson, is the sun still on in Australia? We could get spring break.
Mr. Anderson, I'm going to allow you to just take a pass on that one if you want to.
And no, I think Mr. Anderson wants to answer it because I'm on another path with another committee where there's people in foreign countries doing state work.
So
this connects in my mind and my heart, and I'm really serious about it, and that's why I needed that clarification.
Representative Murphy, I understand then the purpose of your question. So, Mr. Anderson, to the best of your knowledge, is Mr. Byrne does he work from the United States?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, absolutely. He's a resident of Prior Lake, Minnesota, and as far as I know, this is the first time he's ever been off the U.S. soil.
Madam Chair, Mr. Anderson, I guarantee I will never tie it again to my other thing. But the other thing I'm really on a rant about.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for allowing me to clarify this.
Thank you.
To help Mr. Burns and his family.
Representative Erickson.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. And to that point, Representative Murphy, if you go on the website of MMB and you want to look for PEEP information, they'll tell you about this company. And I've called them and talked to them when we were discussing this last year and in previous years.
Good. Thank you. I'll do that.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Anderson, actually, I had a couple of questions for you, so if you don't mind. Just wondering now, when the appropriation was provided by the legislature from our finance committee's area for this, was there any portion of that money that was used? Because obviously the concept of doing this, of the PEEP legislation, and which eventually became the Health Insurance Transparency Act, was talked about for a number of years, but this, you know, just recently enacted. Was there any amount of that money put aside for training or for yourself and Mr. Byrne or Inovo, or to kind of discuss how you're going to move forward to comply with HIDA and that? Because it sounds like there was maybe a couple of hiccups that we've heard about, and I'm just wondering if there was any preparation or training or anything done with some of that appropriations.
Madam Chair, the $294,000 appropriation will be used. It actually hasn't been spent yet. I'm not even sure it's in our account yet. But it's designated for fiscal year 15. We are going to exceed, based on that fiscal note and the testimony I opened with today, we're going to greatly exceed the $294,000 in just the underwriting expenses of the approximately 192 quote requests that we've received thus far. All of that money goes to Deloitte Consulting. They are under contract with the state to provide consulting and actuarial services to both the CGIP, the State Employees Group Insurance Program, that we get our insurance through, and to PEEP. And all of that money will eventually get paid to Deloitte.
All right. And then when I asked you previously before we finished up with the testifiers about, you indicated you're probably, the 294 is probably not going to cover all of your expenditures for preparing the bids, and you indicated that that PEEP from their operating funds, and that would cover the rest. So did you ask for the $294,000, the appropriation? Was that a request that was made to the government for as part of this initiative?
Madam Chair, I personally did not make any request for funds. What I did is participate in the creation of the fiscal note stating that the cost to state and local government would be $294,000 to provide these quotes. But at no time did I personally request, or am I aware of anyone from MMB requesting the funds. I believe the idea behind those funds was to take the onus of providing quotes to non-PEEP participants. It's entirely funded by the premium dollars from groups and their employees. There is no state money involved other than this $294,000. And I think the thought was that the people that have been building up this reserve, that are contributing their premium dollars, should not have to pay for what was viewed as kind of an onerous 200 quotes per year for school districts. After we get through this first year, I think it'll probably actually become more efficient and cost less, as we've got data that just needs to be updated on a lot of these groups as we go.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I'm wondering, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the two-year process and whether that's the right amount of time or not, and I don't know because I'm not an expert in that area, but just a question. I understand that CGIP, or, you know, our State Employees Group Insurance Program, I believe they're on a five-year process. Is that correct? And are you familiar with that? And could you make any comparisons between that program and PEEP?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. The contracts that we have, MMB has for 5 years, are for administrative services. For Blue Cross, for Health Partners, for Preferred One, for our pharmacy benefit manager, Navitas, for Deloitte, things like that. The folks that help us run this program, it's a self-insured program. And I speak of both PEEP and CGIP. They're self-insured programs. We do not have a contract to provide health insurance coverage with anyone. We contract for claims administration, for network services, and like I said, pharmacy benefit management services, underwriting and consulting. Those we use five-year contracts. I believe an initial two-year term with the right to renew for three additional one-year terms. When we talk about the length of an insurance contract, something that PEEP has never done and never will do is offer a guarantee or a rate cap for subsequent years. I cannot do that. That would be irresponsible of me to say that I will not raise your premiums more than X percent. It's entirely possible that we might get three or four catastrophic claims, and we need to collect more in premium to cover those claims. If I've set rate caps and promise that I'm not going to let premiums go up more than 5 or 7%, again, that would be irresponsible and an irresponsible use of public money, in my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Representative Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a quick question, kind of a general question. Maybe Mr. Anderson can answer it. You had a large number of requests for quotes. Under this new law, in your opinion, did other insurance companies receive the same large number of quotes, or was PEEP different in this regard? And did this additional administrative cost affect other insurance companies offering health insurance, much like it did to PEEP?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I am unfamiliar with, I know there's a requirement for groups to request a quote from PEEP and two other resources. I'm not sure how that's been panning out. I'm not sure who those other resources have been, but if perhaps there are representatives from those entities, they could answer that for you. I'm sorry, I can't.
Right. I would say if that information is available and anyone in the audience knows and could provide it, we would welcome that to the committee. So with that, we're at and a little bit over our appointed time. So I want to thank the committee for a really good discussion. Thank our testifiers today. I'm sure we'll come back to this topic at a later time. And with that, the committee is adjourned.